In the last episode, we considered the role of the educational consultant generally and how they fit into the application process. Today, we'll be looking at an ever more critical piece of the application, the college essay, and the best approaches to utilizing this unique writing form in college admissions. I'll be joined by Keith Wilkerson, the owner and founder of College Thoughts, an organization that helps good students go to great colleges by focusing on self-discovery and not stress. They provide test preparation, college application strategy, college essay assistance, and more. With more than two decades of experience helping students attend great middle schools, high schools, and colleges, Keith is now focused on helping strong students to move on to the best colleges in the nation. Keith is a specialist in developing and implementing programs that teach students the value of making the transition from being a good student to one chasing greatness, whether teaching innovative strategies to master standardized testing, helping students to transition to a more challenging educational setting, or speaking about unlocking the mysteries of college application process. Keith always wants students to strive for excellence instead of mere survival. His no-nonsense approach and proven strategies have helped many programs to have successful events with ongoing follow-up. He graduated from Princeton in 1997 with a degree in religious studies. Keith, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Could you explain a little bit about your background and specifically what got you into college counseling?
Sure. When I was in college, I did some research on the SAT and why it wasn't a useful tool for evaluating whether or not a student was prepared for college. And once I graduated from college, people were asking me to talk to their individual students about the research. And one thing led to another. And from there, you know, I started doing it independently for quite a few years. And now here we are with the company. So it just has sort of grown organically over time.
Now, when was that you got started?
So I graduated from college in 1997. I worked with a couple of independent clients in the early 2000s. And then I worked with a specific client in, I guess, 2004, 2005 that really appreciated the work I did with her daughter. And she and her husband gifted me incorporation. So I've been incorporated since 2006.
So you were really at the head of the test blind, test optional, that wave that has sort of crested as of late. That seemed to be sort of the beginning of that movement, right?
It was. You know, the SAT changes every 10 years. So when it changed in 2005, we were right at the head of that. And then it changed again in 2015. So watching it change, watching how people respond to it, seeing FAIR test and others fight against the testing movement, you know, seeing all those transitions happen.
How do you think your background has impacted the way that you've approached college counseling?
That's a good question. When I think back about my journey to college, I went to a comprehensive public high school in Philadelphia. I was one of 1,200 students in high school. We had three college counselors. So they had a caseload of 400 students each.
Yikes.
I remember there were parts of the process that I just learned about incidentally. You know, I remember being on my way to class and a student asked me, "Hey, Keith, are you going to go take the PSAT?" And I said, "What's the PSAT?" And they said, "It's a test that we could sign up to take."
Right.
And I said, "Well, why would I sign up to take a test?" I said, "I'm not signing up to take a test." And they said, "Well, they said if we go to take this test, we miss the first three class periods." Said, "Oh my God, where do we go to take this test?" Like, you know, I mean, that was all I knew about the PSAT. And so along the way, because I was doing well in school, people rallied around and kind of helped me get to different points. You know, now as I'm a college advisor, I look for students like me, students that were doing well in school, but not necessarily informed about what they need to do to convert that success in school into success in the college application process. Mm-hmm. Because just because you're doing well in school, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get the outcomes that you want. I mean, I think a part of my college process, one of the reasons why I was able to go to a school like Princeton was the ignorance of the process. Like, had I known how hard that was to do, I might not have done it. But, you know, I had no idea. In fact, Princeton loves the story of how I ended up applying. When I was in high school, there was a R&B group called Shy that released a song called If I Ever. And I just thought the song was the best thing. And on the radio, they announced that Shy had come from Howard University. And I misheard that and thought that they said that Shy had gone to Harvard University. And so I started telling people I wanted to go to Harvard. But my whole reason for wanting to go was I thought this group was amazing. And I was like, I want to be in the same space that they were in.
Right.
And when I would tell people that I wanted to go to Harvard, you know, they had such bold reactions. Yeah. And I said, oh, wow. I said, so, you know, everybody understands why I want to make this decision. So I was getting a fair amount of press in high school because our newspaper was winning awards and different things. And so every time that something came up where there was going to be some sort of press, I would wear a different piece of Harvard paraphernalia because I was trying to send this message to Harvard that I wanted to, wanted to come. So my mom takes me to the mall and we go to get a Harvard shirt and we go to the department store and they have a Harvard shirt and I pick it up. And my mom says, no, do you see the sign over there? The sign over there says that these college shirts are buy one, get one free. What's the other shirt you want? And I said to my mother, I said, I don't want another shirt. I said, you know, there's one Harvard shirt. That's what I want.
Yeah.
And she said, son, I don't think you understand. The people are saying that there's buy one, get one free. We're going to leave with two shirts together. I said, well, mom, I said, just pick out something. And she said, why don't you get that shirt over there? That shirt over there matches the pants I just bought you. So I pick up this shirt. I said, hey, mom, I said, this shirt says Princeton. Did you know that Princeton's right over in New Jersey? And she said, no, I didn't know that. I said, do you think we could ride over one day and take a look?
That's a great story.
You know, I ended up there in part because of a t-shirt sale at Macy's, like, you know. So as I think about that, I just am reminded, in fact, you know, as a business model, we do a certain amount of pro bono work with students that have high need because I could not have afforded me. And I can't create a model that wouldn't help me. So I have to be thoughtful about that in, you know, in business because, you know, I remember I was willing to do the work. I didn't know what work to do.
Right, right.
So that's what guides me as a college counselor. And I think that when you give students competent but compassionate help, it changes how they see it. I mean, I have a staff of 16 people. 12 of them used to be my students. Yeah. So, you know, the fact that we believe in a relational model and they come back and they want to learn how to do this so that they can help other people, you know, that's... Yeah. To me, that's meaningful.
That's an awesome story. I love it. So could you explain the core of College Thoughts? What makes your organization unique? You sort of touched on it just now a little bit. But
yeah, I think a lot of college advising and test prep is really transactional work. You know, I met twins that I worked with in this past season. And when I was first introduced to them, I said, so, you know, what do I need to know? And one of the twins burst out on the call and said, you need to know that I hated my last SAT tutor.
Right.
And I said, oh, okay. I said, that's interesting. She said, no, no. She said, I don't think you understand. When I say I hated him, I mean I hated him. Right. And it's okay. I said, so can you advise me on what I need to do so that 3 months from now or 6 months from now, you're not telling the next person how much you hated me? And what she explained was one time she was on the line and she's having a conversation with this guy and she's crying at the start of the call. And she said, he just asked, are you going to be able to get through today? And she said, yeah. And he said, okay, turn the page, whatever. And she said, I hated that all that mattered to him was that test. Now, of course, we're here today to talk about the test, but at the same time, you're a person. And I think that instead of approaching the work transactionally, I think that approaching it relationally is really important to success. You know, I tell my staff all the time, we can do great things if our students are okay. But if they're not okay, then we don't really have the capacity to do great things. So we have to first make sure that they are feeling whole as a person, and then we can make sure that they can do great things as an applicant. So I think that's what makes us different. I think that for people who just want, you know, boot camp work and just to grind out what they need to do, I think there are plenty of companies that are willing to put an egg timer on the table, give you your hour, and you can come back again and do it tomorrow. That's not really what we do at College Thoughts.
That's cool. You know, all of the activities that they do, the sports, all of the AP classes, you know, their active social lives, you know, captains of all the teams and heads of all the clubs. I mean, they're just running around with their hair on fire half the time.
Yeah.
Not coming to terms with that, I think, ends up sort of desiccating their approach to any one individual thing.
I think that's definitely true. And I think that as they're going through the process, it's stressful. It's emotional. As they begin to write essays and talk about experiences, sometimes that unearths things that they haven't talked about for a while. And having people that are compassionate, that are not just there because this is my 2 o'clock and I got to get them out of the way so I can do my 3 o'clock, you know, those things matter to me.
Well, and that's, I think, what it becomes if you have 3 counselors for 1,200 students like you did at your school. I mean, I think it has to be transactional at that point. I mean, I don't know how they keep track of names.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be transactional, or it's just, you know, the students, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Mm-hmm, so, but either way, you can't really serve 400 students well.
No, not well. So what type of client is a perfect fit for your group? And I kind of get a sense of that already, but curious to see what you have to say about that.
So I think there's the client that is ideal for us. And I think there's the client who typically comes to us. Okay. They're not necessarily the same. You know, when people go to the website and see where I went to school and those types of things, they come to us because they want these elite school outcomes. And so that ends up being a lot of the work that we do. It's not necessarily the work that we target. I want to help students celebrate their own authenticity and celebrate their own greatness. So it doesn't matter to me if they want to go to the bridge program at the local community college or if they want to go to Harvard. Like, none of that really matters to me. What matters to me is that they have outcomes that are the best for the next step that they want to make in their own educational journey. And so I want a student to come who is invested in their own success and needs guidance on how to get there. You know, the way I describe it when I'm talking to groups is I want to be a driving instructor. I want the kid to choose that they're going to drive. I want the kid to get in the car, and I want to sit in the passenger seat and tell them what's right and what's wrong. I don't want to drive. I don't want to be an Uber driver. I want to be a driving instructor.
Right.
So, gotcha. You know, when I find students who are saying, my mom's making me do this, that's a great student for another firm. I want to work with students who are passionate about getting the outcomes that they want, and what they need is somebody to guide them with a compassionate hand. I mean, that's the work that I...
Oh, that's awesome. That's a very focused view of a target student, I'd say, more so than the average college consultant. What's the kind of ideal path for a student like that?
So, you know, a lot of college consultants take a student like that and they say, when I see a student like you, these are the schools that I think they do well in. And I don't really do that. I walk them through a guided search. You know, I ask them to talk to me about schools that they have seen that have been interesting to them. And I say, if you're interested in this, have you looked at that? And then I want them to look at that. And then if they come back and say, you know, I loved this school, but I don't like this school, then I want to suss out why that's the case. Like, do you not want to be in a city? Was it too big?
Yeah.
You know, I want to guide them to a series of outcomes. And that takes longer than just handing them a list and sending them on their way. But it gives them agency and ownership of their own educational process, which I think is something that serves them well later. You know, one of my favorite things to hear is often students reach out to me and they say, I'm applying to graduate programs now, and I just called to tell you I don't need you. You know, I love it. And they're telling me because I know how to search, and I had the tools to get ready for the GRE. And I'm just amazed that the concepts and the principles that she taught me, they weren't for the undergraduate process. These were life principles, you know? And so, you know, to hear that is always a great thing, because that's what we were hoping for. We're hoping that we were sending drivers out into the world.
Here are a few things that stuck out to me after the first segment of my conversation with Keith. His story about getting into Princeton is a great one, and having the shirt picked out for him by his mother and then sort of developing an interest in it based on the color scheme speaks to sort of the serendipitous nature of the process. A lot of it is based in chance, whether we'd like to admit that or not. However, his sort of broader point in the first section really was that education can help perhaps unlock opportunities that we didn't know about, that there is some intentionality about it, that even though fate certainly seems to play a big role in the way that things turn out, that doesn't mean that our own will and consciousness of the entire process can't be a part of that result in the end as well. Perhaps they're both just two sides of the same coin. Another thing that stuck out to me was his notion of relational focus versus transactional work. I think that's particularly important for a high school kid who perhaps hasn't developed the same compartmentalization skills that an adult has in terms of being able to silo the different portions of your life, you know, whether it's athletic and recreational relationships, social life, your academic or your vocational life. That is really flying all at them in ways that it has never before when they're in high school, and perhaps won't ever again. They have maybe the most challenging schedule of any stage of life. So, you know, the fact that bringing that sort of holistic approach, I think, is a key one, because a teenager sees the world in all of its stripes rather than one dimension. And being able to imitate that experience as much as possible is going to get the kids buy-in at the end of the day. Another thing that stuck out to me was his notion about being a sort of guide. He likened it to being a driving instructor. And I think that's a good analogy, particularly when he talked about letting the kids come up with a list of schools, which is traditionally, and you know, on this podcast, something that has been discussed basically is the sanctified role of the college consultant to come up with that list based on a lifetime of knowledge and visitations and all of those good things and insight into perhaps some schools that kids don't have. Keith sees that more as a student-led experience, which I do think makes him a bit unique from perhaps some others. At the same time, he does recognize that there is a sort of give and take to that as well, and that's a bit of an art form. You know, it's tough when you're 17 to know exactly what you want out of life and even to discover that with some guidance. So I think that's a delicate process, but you can certainly come at it from the angle of, I'm going to determine the list, you know, at the end of the day, based on, you know, what I think is best, or a more student-led experience, as in this case. I think those are two different schools of thought, and he certainly is coming from the latter. What are your thoughts generally on the college essay as a practice? Where does it rank in importance in your mind on an application?
In my mind, I think the college essay is probably one of the more important parts of the application. The rest of the application is about what students do. The essay is an opportunity for them to share who they are. You know, if my recommendation letters talk about what a great student I am, and my transcript shows what a great student I am, and my test scores show what a great test taker I am, but students don't get an opportunity to really convey who they are as people. You know, an analogy I use a lot when I'm talking to students is that all of the application is about Superman. The essay is where we get to meet Clark. And I just think that it's important that they have a chance to humanize themselves in the process. So when students come to us and say, you know, I want to write an essay about everything I've done in all of my clubs, you know, I try to discourage them from that, because we already have all this what you do. Now let's take a moment and talk about who you are, so that colleges get to know who they're getting as a student if they accept you.
That's a great analogy. I like that's the Superman and the Clark. For some kids, that's really hard to reveal. You know, what is a way that you coax that out of perhaps a student who is less apt to kind of reveal their warts?
We take them through a brainstorming process where we just ask them to tell us about the significant moments in their lives. We just want to hear about significant memories. You know, I've had students talk to me about everything from visiting their grandparents' farm to how they choose what ice cream they're going to eat every night, to a student, I think 2 years ago, talked about when she went into the bathroom and decided that she was now prepared to give herself her first haircut. And so her mother came home and just found hair all over the place. You know, kids talk about hallmark moments in their lives. And I think often we're able to take the critical lessons they learn from those hallmark moments and teach colleges who they are as people. I think that one of the things that I encourage my students with is I don't want them to write an essay so that colleges will like them. I want them to write an essay so that colleges will know them. Like, you're not responsible for whether or not they like you. You could be a perfectly great candidate somewhere else. You may not align with what that college is looking for at this particular point in time. So I don't want you to write something that is so vanilla that everybody loves the essay. I actually want you to write something that is authentic and true to yourself. And some people may read that essay and say, this is a great student who's not a great fit in this space. To me, that's what makes sure that I don't get students back for transfer. You know, we're concerned about getting the fit right the first time. And that has a lot to do with authenticity.
Yeah, totally. Imagine a lot of the college essays, and a personal essay, I think, is the tough genre and one that they don't really have a whole lot of experience with. It's not necessarily taught in high school very much. Do you find that it's really an exercise in communicating with metaphor?
Yeah, I think it's a lot about metaphor. It's a lot about being able to step back from your own story and have perspective on it, because a lot of the things that are remarkable about our stories are not remarkable to us because they're our stories, right? Mm-hmm. So helping students to have that perspective. I think a lot of times English teachers are having them write essay drafts in class, and the exercise becomes about writing well instead of writing authentically. And so students think that now I need to have all the commas in the right places in this college essay, which is not as important a thing as making sure that the essay is a clear expression of who you are and what you want to share. In fact, it was an article that I was reading not that long ago that was saying that one of the ways that colleges identify whether or not adults have done too much editing on a college essay is if an older adult has put their hands on a college essay, they have a tendency to put two spaces after every period, whereas kids now only put one space after the period. So it's an immediate red flag that somebody has put their hands on the essay. So, you know, just telling parents, you know, help students be clear, but don't sweep the essay, because if it starts to take on the sound of a 50-year-old lawyer, that's not what colleges want from this.
No, that's interesting. Are there other red flags or even yellow flags that, you know, readers can spot if it's been too heavily massaged?
I mean, that's the one that I saw that I thought was interesting as a standout, because I just remember my teachers being so passionate about that when I was learning how to type.
Yeah, double space. Yeah.
But I mean, I think they also talk about punctuation. You know, sometimes when kids are using colons and semicolons and all of these advanced punctuation marks, that's not typical. So if a student's writing doesn't align all the way, like all of a sudden the supplements are not written in that same tone, it just comes across like Shakespeare wrote it. You know, they don't. I think the other thing that we confront a lot is that students want the essay to be unique. And I'm not really sure that's what colleges want either. When I do essay workshops, I explain to kids that when the first Spider-Man movie came out with Tobey Maguire, I went to see it. I had read the comics, and so it was no surprise to me when this kid gets bitten by a radioactive spider on a field trip, he develops powers, and 5 minutes before the movie is over, he saves the day. I was clear on that before I went, and I went anyway. And then a few years later, they cast Andrew Garfield. and he's right. a kid, and he goes on a trip, and he gets bitten by a radioactive spider.
Right.
And 5 minutes before the movie is over, he saves the day. And I ask kids, if I already know the story, why do I keep going? Mm-hmm. And they say, well, you want to see how different characters interpret the same story. Mm-hmm. Yes, kids, welcome. I don't need you to tell the new story. I need you to be the leading character in a story that I may already know. You know, I want to see your interpretation of the story. And I think that's where you get your standout. I was with a bunch of college admissions counselors in Washington, D.C., and they said lately, kids apparently saw something on TikTok or whatever, where they were saying that you could talk about something that you do every day, and it could be a really interesting college essay. And so they said that kids are now trending to talk about how they shower in college essays. And so they are talking about it in gross detail. I start with my arm, and I like a loofah instead of a washcloth. And they said, if you can get any message out on the streets, please tell kids to stop sending us these awkwardly uncomfortable essays. You know,
right up there with swallowing Tide Pods, right?
Exactly. You know, it's this thing where all of a sudden I want to stand out so badly that I'm standing out in ways that are not positive. And some of the most remarkable essays that I've read are just very simple. You know, I read a great essay a couple of days ago where this young woman is just really passionate about movies through these characters that have contributed to who she is as a person. And it's really simple and it's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it walks you through her story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she said, I don't think anybody's going to be interested in reading this. And I'm like, I think this could be published. But it's mundane to her because it's her. But, you know, for me as a professional, I just thought it was really exceptional.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think there's an intense preoccupation with what you're writing about, you know, so much so that you do lose sight of that.
Exactly. I mean, you know, my ice cream kid was saying that she always keeps 6 different flavors in the freezer. And like, if it was a bad day, it's this flavor. If I got a great score on the test, it's this flavor. Like, she had this system. And her parents said to me, are you serious? Are we really going to let her write this essay about ice cream?
Hmm.
And I said, I don't know. I've never read an essay about ice cream before. Like, I think, you know, if you're trying to help her stand out, and it worked out for her.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta think about it from the perspective of somebody who's reading, like, how many of these? Thousands, really. Imagine going through that. I imagine you'd have to start skimming at some point. You're not going to savor every word. There's no way.
Exactly. And I tell them, if you write something that's really authentic and you do it well, maybe they read the whole thing. I had a student years ago who was applying to Vanderbilt, and she was writing about her struggle with self-image. She said when she was a little kid, she got cast as the Wicked Witch in The Wizard of Oz, and they painted her face green. And she said when she looked at herself in the mirror, she looked so ugly with the paint on. She said she started to cry. Oof. And she talked about how as she got older, the paint wasn't on, but the struggle with learning how to appreciate her own looks and appearance continued. Mm-hmm. And she used the analogy of The Wizard of Oz to talk about how life is really, for all of us, the search for the yellow brick road. And so how do you get from feeling like the Wicked Witch to get to the yellow brick road? So she got to campus, and she's walking across campus, and the director of admissions called out to her. And she said, yes. She said, are you blah, blah? And so she said, yes, I am. She said, I just want you to know, we hope that you find the yellow brick road here. And she said, she just was blown away that the senior official like remembered what she wrote about. But it was powerful, right? But she wasn't seeking power. Like, she wasn't seeking for this essay to be a showstopper. She was talking about her own struggle with self-image. And it just resonates because there's a certain commonality to all of our struggles. Totally. So,
I mean, that's what you're going to remember, right? That authenticness, you know, that honesty in writing is really what makes for a quality piece. But it's tough. I mean, I think it's tough when you're 17 to be that honest.
It is. I think that a lot of the guiding that I do is I encourage people to tell stories and not write reports. Like, if you're going to do it, bleed on the page. Like, I want you to give me all of the gory details. Don't tell me I was afraid. And then my friend told me that I should not be afraid. And I was not afraid anymore. Like, don't do that to me. If you're
telling, not showing, right? I
mean, yeah, make me shake. Like, make me feel your fear. So that when you are then victorious at the end, I make that rise with you as the reader. And so helping students talk about those things powerfully is, I think that's my part. I don't want to tell them you have to talk about this. I don't think that's my role. But if you're going to talk about this, hit me with it.
Yeah, I think it's tough too for perhaps some kids that aren't big in humanities, aren't creative writers necessarily, or perhaps more concrete thinkers and maybe more STEM oriented. To be able to pull out the detail and show things?
I mean, it hasn't proven to be true. I think that my humanities kids tell stories with broader strokes and brighter colors. I think that my STEM kids tell stories as STEM kids would. You know, my most interesting STEM essay that I've read so far this year is a student from California who says that she spent all this time asking her mom to buy her a Nintendo Switch. And I said her mom wouldn't buy it for her. She said, I won't buy it for you, but if you can build it, you can have it. And she talks about how then she went about studying the schematics, sourcing the pieces, and then she built it herself so that she could have it. And so it's written like an engineer would write an essay.
Right, I get you.
But I've never heard of being challenged to do such a thing. And it would never cross my mind to sit at home and build a video game system. But, you know, she'll jump on a Zoom call and show it to you.
And despite being written in a sort of different style, you feel it still communicates just as plainly?
It's her. You know, if she wrote about the smell of waffles wafting through the house, that's not her. Like, she is a technically oriented kid, and so she speaks about it in detail. Now, does she get animated when she's talking about this technical stuff? Yes, she does. But that's what I want. You know, that's what I want her to convey in the essay. Now, do I have to tell her, we don't need to know the name of every transistor that you put into this thing? You know, she would love to go into that type of detail because that's what's interesting to her. No, we just need to make sure that we're telling the core story. I think that's where I can help to provide guidance so that the average reader doesn't get lost in too much detail.
Here are a few things that stuck out to me after the second segment of my conversation with Keith. I loved his notion of the essay being the Clark Kent of your sort of your identity, revealing all the warts, all of the things that are not indicated in your strengths, which, as he rightly says, are really part of the resume. And I think you risk repeating yourself if you're talking about how great your experience was as captain of the varsity soccer team or whatever it was. Those are perhaps things that can be filled in by college admissions officers. And really, they're looking to kind of humanize a piece of paper, or I guess a set of papers at that point in the admissions process. They're looking to admit human beings, three-dimensional human beings at the end of the day. And I think as much as they can get away from just calculating numbers and doing it based on algorithms, I think they'd like to do that. I think that's part of their motivation internally. So I think that's a great perspective on a college essay. Bring forward perhaps your weaknesses. That is an opportunity to do that that doesn't exist in other parts of the application. Another thing that stuck out to me was his observations about plagiarism and detection. Specifically, he mentioned two spaces after a period, or perhaps more advanced punctuation marks that high schoolers have to use, semicolons, etc., perhaps more advanced syntax, or inconsistencies between the Common App essay and supplements being sort of dead giveaways, speaks really to the time period that we're living in. You have a natural tension between the increasing importance in the college essay with the challenges to other portions of the essay, you know, the testing, grade inflation. Those other parts are becoming less reliable. So at the same time, there are also many challenges to the essay, which bring qualitative perspective to, you know, what type of student you're dealing with in ways the other parts the application don't. So I think there is very much of a tension there. But I have to imagine that admissions officers are developing a keen eye towards what is actually authentic and non-plagiarized. I think they have to at this point. And so I think that's really something to keep in mind when you're thinking about, well, how much of this should I take from resources online? How much other people should be sort of involved in this process versus sort of the authentic voice of the person writing the essay? Another thing that stuck out to me, really a theme of that entire segment, was that authenticity really is at the heart of all quality college essays and supplements too. But authenticity takes courage. I think that's tough, you know, particularly for a high school kid. I mean, we tell them to bring out their weaknesses. I don't know if it's anything like my high school experience. I think I'd rather set myself on fire than have to talk about the things that were wrong with me or the things that were weak or needed improvement when I was 17 years old. But at the same time, that's good writing. I mean, that's the difference between good writing and bad writing is courage for personal writing. And the more it's glossed over and made perfect and less authentic, the lower the quality of the essay and the less it says about you. And the more it indicates, ironically, that you are not perhaps that polished as a person. So I think that can be a real challenge, but a critical one. And I think a lot of the work that I do when I'm working with kids who are doing the college essay is in being boldly and recklessly honest and authentic. And really the rest takes care of itself from there. How has the evolution of college applications impacted the role of college essay writing? Has it taken on a new role in the application? Because there have been some noticeable trends, I'd say.
I was talking to an officer at one elite school, and they said that the most important shift is that getting into elite schools used to be about the content of the applications. Do you have the right grades? Do you have the right scores? Did you do the right activities? They said now getting into elite schools is about the context of the application. They have so many applications that have all of the necessary content that now they can spend a lot of time thinking about fit. And so the essay then becomes one of the critical pieces to show whether or not this is the person that we want. Like, is this the citizen we want in the dorms? Is this someone who's going to try new things? Is this someone who is going to be a leader? I can see all that through the stories that people decide to tell. And so because context is becoming so important in this climate, you know, I think the essay plays a more critical role than ever, as well as the supplements, where when I'm talking about why I applied to a certain school, if I'm saying I applied to your school because it's a good school and because I want to be in New York City or I want to be in California, that's just not good enough anymore because they're really thinking really carefully about fit and how much you have thought about fit in determining where you're going to apply.
Those supplements have been sort of afterthoughts, I would say, you know, in the past. I think that's the tendency to throw those things in, especially with the Common App being so dominant. It's easy to just kind of throw in those supplements just to kind of...
It can be. And I mean, you know, you can tell I pretty much live in analogy. I think that's how people understand things. When kids are writing these supplements and they're writing their essay, I talk to them about dating. You know, they say to me, well, I'm going to tell them that, you know, it's a really nice program and I really want to be in New York. And I say, okay, if somebody was asking you out and they said, well, you know, she's a really nice girl and I like her neighborhood, would you be out with that person? Well, no, I'd be really offended. Well, why? Well, I want him to specifically tell me why. Oh, okay. So you want specifics.
Right.
But you want to speak to them in these generalities.
Right.
And now they get it. Like now they understand why these types of details are important and why I have to be more thoughtful in, you know, presenting this overture to this college.
Well, I imagine it makes it far more important too for those schools to determine if those essays are actually written by the students and to what degree. But I suppose authenticity is not something that can be plagiarized. Would you say that's the case?
It's harder. It's definitely harder. I mean, I think that in the age of artificial intelligence and ChatGPT and all that type of thing, where you can say, I want an essay that deals with these themes.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I was in high school, my friends and I liked to play chess a lot. And if we were playing a computer program, it was hard to beat the computer if you played the game the way you're supposed to play the game. But if you did something that was a little bit off the beaten path, the computer had a hard time reading it because the computer is prepared for you to do what you're supposed to do. And I think that with artificial intelligence, you know, if I tell it I'm applying to elite schools, I'm a baseball player, and I want to talk about winning the big game, it's going to write a very predictive essay. But if I talk about how I've learned more by losing than by winning,
yeah,
the AI is going to struggle to write that because that's counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, I just think that really being authentic, really thinking about, you know, what are the ingredients that have added up to this person that we have in front of us? It's just going to really be important, because just writing a basic essay is going to be something that you can do in 10 minutes with an online tool.
Yeah. I mean, do you think those essays that are being written by ChatGPT or whatever it is, do you think college admissions officers are developing an eye for those?
I think they're able to recognize them to a large extent. I'd be shocked if in the coming weeks and months, there aren't tools, you know, an algorithm that's going to tell us when something is written by a computer and when it's not written by a computer. You know, I'm a basketball fan. I was watching when Ja Morant posted his apology for his gun incident, and they plugged those same criteria into ChatGPT, and his posted apology was identical to what came out of ChatGPT. I think there are going to be ways to get caught.
I think they are already. I mean, I think there's a war kind of going on between the identification software and then the things that beat that the identification. I'm curious to see where that goes exactly.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like anything else. You know, you build a new lock and then thieves get better and then you need a new lock.
Yeah. One final question. If you had sort of one parting piece of advice for parents and young adults that are entering this process of, let's say, college essay writing based on the current trends, you know, what would that piece of advice be?
If I had one piece of advice to give everybody about the process of writing a great college essay, it would simply be to amplify the student's voice. I think that oftentimes a student has something they want to talk about, and grandma feels one way, and mom and dad feel a different way, and the English teacher has an opinion, and the college counselor has an opinion. And by the time you finish amalgamating all of those opinions, you can't hear the child anymore. And if you amplify their voice, if you just celebrate what they want to talk about and what's important to them, at least they'll be clearly heard. Like I said, everybody may not be, you know, in love with what you have to say. But, you know, if I'm being honest, I don't trust people that everybody likes. You know, I think that you should not be everybody's cup of tea. I think that if you are authentic, you're going to be drawn to some people and you're going to be, you know, repelled from others. And I think by amplifying their voice, you give them a certain sense of self-confidence that's going to stretch beyond the essay into whatever their future is going to be at the school that they end up going to.
Here are some final thoughts after my conversation with Keith surrounding the college essay. It was interesting. He led off the final portion talking about how in elite college admissions, that college essay and the supplements used to be used as sort of additional content, right? Like the cherry on top, perhaps. But now they use it to contextualize, to, as he put it, think about fit. When you're comparing people with perfect scores on the SAT and, you know, 4.0 or 4.5 GPAs, and all the APs, you know, they've all cured cancer and started nonprofits. And, you know, so once you sort of hit those benchmarks, you know, how do you distinguish yourself? The fit with the school, I think, has become more and more important. The personality, how does your personality fit in with the institution that you're going to? That's really, I think, an underrated part of choosing a school in the end. I mean, it gets lost in the shuffle of quality. But your experience at college is as much defined by how well you fit in there as it is the degree of difficulty or, you know, how well it reflects on your resume at the end of the day. There's an exchange that happens between what you have to bring to the institution and what the institution has to bring to you. That's really more of a dance than, you know, one providing to the other. So that's, I guess, really why the college essay has become such a critical piece, because it speaks directly to what that relationship is going to look like. I think college admissions officers are looking for that at the end of the day in measuring two candidates that might otherwise be identical on paper. Another thing that stuck out to me was the role of ChatGPT and you know, other online software that is really going to determine the future of college essay writing. I think it's certainly a warfare between being able to identify when someone is using software to plagiarize and then beating that detection software. And, you know, that sort of war is just heating up. But I think, you know, as Keith sort of pointed out, things that are perhaps a little bit off the beaten track, things that are unique, that are authentic, by definition really can't be plagiarized. The more interesting and away from the crowd, I think that is territory that I don't think ChatGPT will ever be able to conquer, regardless of how far it advances in its sophistication. And I think that's where continually students are going to have to look when they're constructing these college application essays to really speak to their personality and, you know, what they can offer to these colleges beyond what can be produced by an algorithm. Another thing that stuck out to me was his sort of returning to this concept of amplifying the child's voice was the way that he put it. Don't be somebody that everyone likes was the way he put it. I thought that was kind of interesting. Ironic. I mean, I think the tendency is to win a popularity contest. I mean, you are trying to compete with a lot of other people. So this may seem a little counterintuitive. But, you know, you don't want it to be too massaged. You don't want six people coaching this into a nice, pretty little thing with the bow tied up at the end. I don't think that's going to be as authentic, as you put it, as, you know, something that, you know, has a bit more flavor of originality. I think these things are fairly obvious to a trained reading eye. And these admissions officers, you know, as we said, are going to be reading thousands of these things. So they have keen eyes. They will be able to tell if something is original or if something is polished. And the polished, frankly, is uninteresting. And it's not something to remember. And that's what we want at the end of the day. They want to have something that's memorable. And we don't remember the things that are polished. We remember the rough, the rigid, the things that run counter to expectations. You know, that's human nature. So that's really what you should be seeking when you're putting these essays and supplements together.